This year, our podcast will explore the multi-layered experiences which encompass Ireland's past, and will also put into context how the sense of heritage is all about our collective experience, and why so much that went before still resonates in the present. I hope you enjoy the show. The National Biodiversity Data Centre, which was established by the Heritage Council in 2007, collects and manages data on Ireland's biodiversity. The data centre is jointly funded by the Heritage Council and the National Parks and Wildlife Service, Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. In order to conserve Ireland's biodiversity, we need to document what biodiversity we have, understand how it is distributed across the island of Ireland and its marine waters, track how it is changing over time, and communicate the importance of conserving biodiversity. Addressing these knowledge gaps and building the scientific evidence base to help its conservation is central to the work of the Data Centre. In addition to this core work, funding is provided to oversee and assist with implementation of the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, which runs from 2021 to 2025. And this is endorsed by over 61 governmental and non-governmental organisations in Ireland. In today's podcast, Dr. Liam Lysett, Director of the Data Centre, explains why it was established and the strategic importance of its work. We also hear from Oisin Duffy, Surveys and Records Officer, who talks about the Citizen Science Portal. And then we hear from Niamh Phelan, Biodiversity Engagement Officer, who discusses the Data Centre's outreach and training work. On with the show. A big welcome to Liam Lysett, the Centre Director for the National Biodiversity Data Centre. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well, thank you.
What I'd like to do is maybe you give the listener the big overview of your work. And I know before we hit the record button, we were chatting about your career and there's nearly a parallel in both. So could I ask you to fill in the listener about what you were doing back in the day and how you ended up here?
Okay, yeah, well, it's interesting, really. I suppose I began my career working in two of the national parks in Ireland, in Connemara and the Burn. And it was a fantastic experience about learning about protected area management and what was involved in that. But I suppose after a short time, I began to realize that if you did want to make an influence in conservation, that kind of wider countryside issues were equally as important, if not even more important. So when the opportunity presented itself that I had an opportunity to work with the Heritage Council as the wildlife officer, I jumped at it because I thought that if you could propose policies, which was one of the key functions of the Act, the Heritage Act, to propose policies for natural heritage, that it would provide the opportunities really for protecting natural heritage in the wider countryside. And I suppose the evolution from there is that, yes, of course, proposing policies is a powerful statutory instrument. But underpinning it all then was the fact that very often there was a dearth of information about what was out there and how activities, I suppose, in the countryside were impacting on natural heritage. So again, when an opportunity presented itself to apply for the post here as director of the National Biodiversity Data Centre, I just thought it really appealing that, you know, if you could produce the evidence base and produce the data, that logically there'd be good sound decision making and policies following on from that. So that is a very short, succinct outline, I suppose, of my career path to date.
Yeah, and the data is the starting point, really. And I think everything that you're about and the things we'll hear about on this episode is the accuracy of the data and even the sources of the data. Because when we think of data, normally we have a very narrow funnel. You know, we think it's a very scientific method. But I think in your case, it's nearly the more the merrier, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, yes, that's correct. I suppose really my attitude is if you want to protect biodiversity, you have to know what you have. That's the starting point, really. And and data can sound as quite a dry topic, but really what it is it's just capturing, you know, engagements that people have with wildlife when they're out and about, or, you know, observations that people make. And the beauty about it, if I see a swallow out the window, it's nice for me. It doesn't tell us a great deal. But if if 100 people in Waterford see swallows out the window and we can track when they see them, you're beginning to build up associated information about these observations, and you're really beginning to build a picture of not only what biodiversity we have, but how biodiversity, you know, the phenology, the life cycles are changing with the seasons. And I suppose more importantly, then it allows us, if you do kind of systematic collection of data, it allows us to track change. And that is a really big one, tracking change in the countryside, because, you know, there's big things like climate change and land use change. And these are the building blocks, really, of trying to assess what's happening and understanding in the wider countryside.
And what kind of changes are we seeing since 2007, Liam?
Well, look, it's it has to be said that we're seeing a decline in biodiversity across the countryside. 2007 was when the Heritage Council set up the data centre and established it. But actually, the serious population declines started right back in the late 1960s and early 1970s. So it was really only a continuum from that time. But we only have a snapshot, really, of how biodiversity in the countryside has changed over the last maybe 20 years, because we didn't really have any empirical data or monitoring before that. So we're seeing a continued progression of the countryside becoming more and more uniform the whole time. And, you know, kind of land use changes that perhaps in the 1970s weren't so dramatic because there was so much wild areas. Now, any little remaining patch of scrubland or any wet field that's drained, or in fact, any, you know, urban development in a species-rich area, you know, the impact now of this is much more bigger than it was in the 1970s, because so little remaining.
That sounds like we should be concerned.
Oh, absolutely. There's no denying. The National Parks and Wildlife carry out formal assessments, conservation assessments of different groups of species, and so far 12 have been completed for different taxonomic groups. We call these red lists. They're an international criteria in terms of assessing change over different time periods. And it's found that about 1 in 5 species that's been assessed is under threat with extinction. And for species like bees and fish, it's as high as 1 in every 3 species is threatened with extinction. So we have the information, and it's fairly dramatic what has happened in the countryside.
And Liam, are there similar data centres in other countries? I presume there are. Are there?
There are indeed. Yeah, we're the Irish node for this global data centre. Let's call it. It's a virtual one. It's called the Global Biodiversity Information Facility. So we're one of maybe 90 partners across the world who are mobilising data and feeding it all into this one big data portal in Copenhagen. And it's kind of exciting in one way. When I'm out walking my dog where I live in Kilkenny, and if I see, you know, a ladybird or maybe something a bit more exotic like a cuckoo, I will take note of the observation and submit it to the data centre. And that data, once it's validated, goes off into hyperspace and goes to the global biodiversity database, where, you know, the observation of the cuckoo is side by side with the observation of an elephant in South Africa or, you know, a humpbacked whale off the Atlantic. So it's really quite exciting, actually, the global perspective for data.
Yeah. And so I presume the comparisons are going on the whole time. Are they international trends and everything?
Yeah, well, the centres that are contributing data, I mean, it's open data for science purposes. There's a huge database of over 1 billion observations, and they're freely available for researchers to use. And yeah, a lot of the big kind of global assessments that have been done on biodiversity loss use the data from GBIF. And it's wonderful that the Irish data is feeding into this portal that, you know, that when you're looking at international trends, that there is actually data from Ireland feeding into that.
Yeah, and the strategic value of all of this data collection, Liam, how would you describe that?
Again, I would stress the fact, if we want to protect biodiversity, we're actually trying to protect the kind of life support system, actually, of the country, of the island. And anything like this, we have to have it. We have to understand what's happening. And it's the basis upon which informed decisions can be made. So, like, I see this as really important. Like, biodiversity loss is critical for society's future. it's critical for our economic well-being. You know, there's all these ecosystems, goods and services being provided by nature and biodiversity. So like any important sectoral activity, you have to have information management systems to be able to capture what's happening and use the information to inform decisions. So I see it, you know, I suppose a lot of society probably doesn't really appreciate the importance of biodiversity or the importance of biodiversity loss. But I do think what we're doing here is kind of it's an important element that the importance might only become more apparent in 10 or 20 years down the line.
Yeah, and with every data set and every comparison, I presume comes a set of conclusions and recommendations.
It wouldn't be true to say that, to be honest. I mean, I suppose our motivation is to try to mobilize and collate as much data as possible so that it's scientifically valid, the data is there, and think of it as a kind of a large repository where the data is stored digitally and it's available for anyone. But again, then there's probably little snippets of or slivers of the data sets that we can actually analyze, and those then gives us insights as to how things are changing. I mean, some of the work that we do, we can talk in more detail about the various elements, but one of the aspects of the work that we do, which I think is really, really important, is that we're trying to develop a number of national monitoring programs for different aspects of biodiversity. And this is where we mobilize. It's mostly citizen scientists. People are giving of their time and expertise freely because they want to make a contribution to conservation. But we're mobilizing these citizen scientists, asking them to go out to do a count, a quantitative count of whatever species, according to a strict protocol, so we can actually then track changes from year on year. And that kind of monitoring is really powerful. And for example, we have the Irish Butterfly Monitoring Scheme, where we have 100 volunteers walking on a weekly basis during the summer. And that has shown since 2008 that there's been a 1.3% annual decrease in butterfly populations year on year. You know, that's, and there's a similar, actually, the picture is even worse for bumblebees. I think it's almost 5% decline year on year. So that, you know, that kind of measurement and that kind of monitoring is hugely important.
Yeah, of course. In one of the previous episodes we spoke, it was regarding the pollinator plan. Yeah. And we spoke to, I think it was John Fogarty, who was a farmer. Yeah, in Horse and Jockey. And I think he was one of your recorders. And I think he had changed a lot of their hedge cutting routines and everything else to facilitate biodiversity, you know. And I thought that was very interesting.
One of the real strengths of the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan is that it's providing a series of evidence-based actions. Based on research, we know that if these actions are taken, it's going to have certain positive consequences. And that information then is presented in terms of providing people an opportunity. If they want to do things, they know what the right thing to do is. And of course, it's not just that then. There's a kind of a feedback loop where the pollinator plan collects some of the information about who's doing what in the locality, feeds it back into a portal. And it means that the whole information cycle is complete. And at the end of each cycle of the pollinator plan, we're able to say, you know, these are the actions that are being carried out. And it gives you some impression of the cumulative impact of the action. So, yeah, information and data is important in different ways.
Yeah, so the cause and effect, and you measure it, and then you can learn from the different changes.
Exactly.
And everything.
Yeah.
Since the centre was established in 2007, Liam, has it evolved since then?
Yeah, well, I think obviously when the Heritage Council established it, as you say, in 2007, it's gone through a few development phases. I mean, the first phase was really just trying to get our feet under the desk and trying to get the centre established. There was a lot of support for a data centre on biodiversity. There was a huge need for it. The Heritage Council had identified that in terms of its own policy advice. So the first job of work really was to build the identity of what the centre would be. And obviously to put in place all the kind of boring governance structures that, you know, you have to have in place for an efficient organization to run. They were very important. But yeah, I suppose the thing was, once we were clear internally within staff what the role of the center should be and what its identity should be, we then had a job of work where we had to go out and engage with, let's say, the community of partners that we work with, and to try to convince them that the vision that we had for the center was the correct one. And where they disagreed, we actually tried to listen to them and maybe modified a bit. But I think there was a really good team of colleagues here that we were very driven. We were very clear, I think, in our own strategy, what we wanted to achieve. And of course, then on top of that, we had the resources provided by the Department of Heritage and the Heritage Council to build the infrastructure. It's all data, and we were in a position to be able to build the online databases and infrastructure, which is so essential in this day and age. So, yeah, so that was the initial stage, just trying to, I'd call it the establishment phase, build the identity and make our work program operational. And the second phase then was actually doing it and delivering it and trying to show the value of mobilizing data, bringing partners together to work to a kind of common objective, and trying to get the data out there to inform decision-making and use the data. Well, actually, decision-making was one side. I know that Oisin will be talking a small bit more about the Irish Citizen Science Portal. Biodiversity is a wonderful topic for engagement with people. People out there, whether it's a fox they'll see in an urban setting, or whether, you know, the cuckoo or the swallow, people... it's really good for people to actually engage in this. And we've provided a kind of an online resource where people can, first of all, capture their own information, their own observations, and contribute to the national database. So they're feeling part of a whole. They kind of feel that they're able to contribute meaningful to something. They can keep track of their own observations. And as they learn and as they upskill, they can see the benefits of this. And one of the things we often talk about nature conservation, talk about, you know, sites of European importance, all the high level kind of regulatory stuff. But, you know, think globally and act locally. It's wonderful if you go for a walk every, you know, the same riverbank every week or every day, that you can open your eyes, document what you see. And it opens up a whole new world for you of engagement and enjoyment. And I suppose, again, it is the kind of building block, or it's the seed that you have to plant if you want people to take appreciation of their biodiversity in their locality.
And looking forward, Liam, do you have a number one priority for the next phase?
Yeah, well, this is probably more a personal vision than anything else. I mean, one of the things that there has been an investment by the state in the infrastructure that we've built. And it's state of the art. It's been developed by a small SME called Compass Informatics. And we have an awful lot of systems that can be used for different purposes. And my vision is that the state has already invested in this. So really, we should try to coordinate where other aspects, other agents of the state kind of utilize this infrastructure and share the services that it provides, so that we can actually crank it up a gear more again and get more and more data and more use of this system as a kind of a shared service for the public sector. So think of it as a national platform, really, for the public sector in terms of data management mobilization. And I think if you got, you know, five or six of the key agencies sharing and using the facility, I think the power then of that information resource would be tremendous. And it really would be a shop window, wouldn't it, for all public sector involvement in biodiversity.
Yeah, absolutely. Liam, thanks a million for coming on the Heritage Council podcast. We'll talk to you again.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Next, we hear from Oisin Duffy, Surveys and Records Officer, who talks about the Citizen Science Portal.
A big welcome to Oisin Duffy to the Heritage Council podcast. How are you keeping?
Getting on great, Greg. Thanks.
If my information is right, Oisin, you're the Surveys and Records Officer with the National Biodiversity Data Centre.
Yeah, that's 100%.
Yeah. Now, if I bumped into you, you know, walking down a street or maybe having a pint somewhere, and you told me that, I'd be like, that's brilliant. So for the listener, can you translate what that actually means?
Yeah. So I suppose really the National Biodiversity Data Centre, we host a thing called Ireland Citizen Science Portal, which effectively sounds quite wordy, but what it effectively is that the blue tit that you see when you're walking through the woods, or the red fox that you see scampering down the back of the garden in the evening. If you make a sighting of those and you want to actually record that, you do it through Ireland Citizen Science Portal. My job effectively is the day-to-day management of that. And then I suppose on the other side, survey side as well, is addressing knowledge gaps where they exist and trying to find ways where we can actually encourage people to record species where there's records lacking, really. So it's, there's a lot of different facets to it.
Okay, so you're the big net of this information coming from citizens about our biodiversity.
Yeah, so I suppose it's quite a broad approach. So all the data comes in through the Citizen Science Portal, and then it goes through a process of validation, either through in-house expertise or through external experts who would be classified as national experts in their particular field. Once it goes through that, it ends up on the other system that the National Biodiversity Data Center runs, known as Biodiversity Maps. And that acts as a validated database for all the information of species distributions in Ireland, and can be used freely by anyone or any bodies that want to use it.
So you're the first door, and then it's filtered a little bit and put into proper shape and everything, so that it's useful information then that people can access and use.
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
Okay, and I heard what you were saying about spotting a fox in the garden or a particular type of bird somewhere. And is that accidental? Can anyone just log in and log this information? Or is that a process that you've set up with official recorders or people who've signed up to be recorders?
Yeah, so I suppose there's, the data center's been established for a while now. So we do have an already existing network of recorders. And before even the data center would have existed, it would have been a network of recorders throughout the country. But I suppose Ireland Citizen Science Portal really encourages everyone from beginners to all the way up to national experts to submit their sightings of wildlife that they see around them. And that's, everything from kind of ladybirds and butterflies and bumblebees all the way to birds, mammals, and of course, plants as well. So I suppose casual recording is a huge amount of it. We do also have monitoring schemes. So you might have heard the butterfly monitoring scheme or the bumblebee monitoring scheme. And those are a little bit more, I suppose, in-depth. They require you to actually have a methodology for when you're actually going out. A lot of the records that will be coming in through the Citizen Science Portal are what we'd call casual sightings or casual observations. So when you are on a walk and you just, spot something and you feel like logging it, I suppose what you're saying there about people, being able to log whatever they want, there is a certain amount of, I suppose, quality assurance that we need when records are coming through. And that's where we come to something known as the 4 W's. So that's the who, what, where, when. And those are the elements of a biological record that are needed for it to actually be a valid biological record. And that's really just the who. So that's yourself. That's your full name and your email address in our case. The where is the location. So on our system, that's the actual, the name of the townland or maybe the nearest village, the county, and the spatial reference, which is automatically generated actually on our site through the individual recording forms. There's the when, and that's the actual date of the observation. And that's, really important as well for the kind of the validation side of things. And then the what is probably the most important thing of all as well. That's the actual thing that you've cited. And you don't have to be you don't have to have a Latin textbook beside you. A lot of the species that are actually on our system do have both the common name and what we would consider then the scientific name. So anyone can take part and get involved. You just need those few bits of information.
Is that the citing of something that Joe Public would consider to be unusual, or would it be a regular enough occurrence?
One of the things we'd always say is that it's, personal preference for what you want to record. I suppose, it's whatever you enjoy, because, there's no point doing it if it's hard work for you or anything like that. Do what you really enjoy with it. And we would obviously encourage people to, submit records for things that are rare or that have restricted distributions. But the thing about it as well is that if we don't record things that are common, how do we know that they're common? As time goes on, if people stop recording something and go, oh, well, that's so common, I'll just leave it to someone else. It is good to basically record everything in that sense. But again, there's some people that will only record, very rare things that they spot. And there's other people that will record literally everything that moves and everything that doesn't move as well.
You might give me the process. So if I'm on a stroll or I observe something in my own garden, I presume the best thing is to take a quick note of the time and what you observed. Is there a role here for photographs? Does that come into it?
Yeah, so I suppose there's two different ways that records can actually come in to us. There's the Biodiversity Data Capture app, which is a smartphone app, which allows you to do everything kind of live in the field, as it were, if you know what I mean. So you can't actually put the records in retrospectively. But if you don't have your smartphone on you at the time, or you don't have the app when you actually make the sighting, you can also go on to the Citizen Science Portal web-based page, and that's records.biodiversityireland.ie. We would always recommend to try and take a photo. It's not always possible, particularly with things like bees or butterflies. Plants are a little bit better because they don't move. But so if you can take a photo, that does really help with the validation process. So I suppose the first thing is that if you know what the species is, that's great. If you don't know what it is, you might take a photo of it, and then you might have to go to a reference book, or you might have to go to a group on Twitter or Facebook or something like that and post a picture and say, I need a bit of a help with the identification. You could also come to ourselves with it as well, but there's lots of great guides already on the website. So if you are stuck on identification, there's plenty of places that you can go for it. Once you know the actual name of the species or what it is, you can start to actually put in the information that we talked about. So again, it's just your own name and email address, date, location, and then where it is. And you can enter one photo in with the record then at that point. And once you do that, you just submit the record, and that gets sent in to us then.
Okay. Is it the same people that typically end up, you know, submitting information to you in that way, or does it tend to be a little bit more random?
We have a fairly good mix. I mean, as I was saying there, we had nearly 8,000 recorders last year that had submitted records to us. And there's, you know, a vast amount of people that are submitting just one or two records. But we also have a small, you know, like a relatively small cohort of people as well that are submitting plus 1,000 records. You know, so these are people that are obviously, you know, very highly skilled, very highly motivated as well, and have a very good knowledge base across a wide range of different taxonomic groups. So I suppose we're getting records from all sorts of different types of people with all different sorts of knowledge bases. And I suppose we just want to kind of, you know, encourage people to actually see what's in their area, particularly with last year when we had lockdown, we noticed a particular surge of recording because I think people were locked down to their 5K and they were doing the walks. So they needed something to make it a little bit more interesting. So people started, taking an interest in some of the spring flowers that were coming around and kind of the birds and then the changes in the seasons and things like that. So it definitely is, it's a really wide group of people that are submitting records to us. So it's not just, you couldn't just put a one stereotypical recorder, I suppose.
And it sounds like there's going to be a legacy benefit in all of that. And I know you mentioned COVID and people finding more time to appreciate where they're living and everything else, our kind of natural heritage. I hope in a way that kind of interest will stay with people, in particular our younger cohort, you know, they might bring that into adulthood and everything else.
Yeah, and I suppose it's very important, I suppose, in a way, because we'll only ever conserve what we know about. So it's very difficult to have any concern or to have any care for something if we don't know it exists in the first place. So sometimes it just takes a little bit of, you know, time just to get back to basics and actually take in, you know, the nature that's around us. Because, you know, so many of us were, you know, we've been highly involved, you know, kind of in nature when we were kids. And then it kind of eventually just like maybe kind of like gets out of your system a little bit, or, you know, the working world or whatever kind of takes over on it. But it is worthwhile just to kind of get back to basics on it. I mean, there's lots of great recording initiatives that we're running at the minute, even that people can get in touch with. A lot of people will say to us, well, I'm not a citizen scientist. I've never done any kind of science. But by the virtue of the fact of even submitting one record to us, you're already a citizen scientist. So you may as well kind of continue to send records into us. For anyone that's listening out there that is interested in getting involved but has no background in recording, the Spring Flowers Project is an ideal project to get involved with. There's only 20 species to look for. And depending on where you are in the country, you're probably only going to have about 10 of them, really, to be honest. So it's well worth, that's a project well worth keeping an eye out for, because it's nice and simple. It's a nice entry level one to kind of get involved with. So regardless of your skill set, you'll be able to get involved. And there's lots of ID resources and species profiles online as well. So that's a nice handy one for people to get involved with.
Yeah, it sounds like something to make a nice family walk very, very interesting.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And I suppose it's a case that, you know, there's so much of the kind of the nature side of things is targeted at kids. And very often, I think parents or adults don't see it as being a thing that they can get involved with. They see it as being a kid's activity. But you know, as I told you there about the, you know, over 168,000 records that are coming in, they're not done by kids, they're done by adults. And, you know, it's the level of detail that's needed for the records to come in isn't something that, you know, kids would necessarily be doing. And I'm sure there's a few that could, but you know what I mean, in that sense. So it is definitely a case that, you know, adults can definitely get involved with nature too without it being, you know, kind of gimmicky or anything like that. It's something that they can definitely get involved with. And we see from that many different recorders that, you know, there's been a huge buy-in from the public for this kind of, you know, kind of recording initiatives and things like that.
Yeah, and by engaging, I guess in a way you're retraining yourself or relearning. As you mentioned, we knew a lot of these things as children. You know, we were taught all of the different, you know, flower types and et cetera, as school kids. And, you know, as busy life, you know, gets in the way of everything. We tend to lose all of that, don't we?
Yeah. And I suppose it's, you know, it's a shame to lose any of this stuff. And I suppose it's particularly, it's a case that it's one thing about losing it, but I suppose is then the people that have lost it go on to teach kids the quality of, you know, maybe kind of nature skills and things like that goes down. So it's good that there's, you know, initiatives like green schools and you know, the kind of the green flags and all those kind of things still about to kind of keep, you know, kids engaged, you know, the heritage, the schools and things like that as well. So it's very important to have that aspect in it because we don't want it to be lost any further, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And you're at the front line observing this information coming in raw. Any unusual sightings last year, unusual trends or anything that you'd like to share?
Well, I suppose probably the most unusual thing was actually the surge in recording. I mean, we'd seen a fantastic year back in 2019 where we'd about over 25,000 records that had come in, and that was close to almost 6,000 different individual recorders. Now that seemed, you know, that's a huge amount of recording activity. And it's a huge amount of knowledge that's out there. And I mean, again, this is all people that are doing this voluntarily out of their own time, generally because they just enjoy recording. They've kind of gotten the bug for it, if you know what I mean. So when it came to the end of 2020, basically by the time it even came to April last year, we kind of knew that there was something up because we were getting huge spikes, you know, April, May, June, July, basically the whole way through the rest of the year, we were topping what we were getting the previous year. We reached a milestone of 100,000 records by July. So that's a huge milestone that we achieved. I mean, to consider that back in 2018 for the full year, we just received over 100,000 records for the entire year. So I suppose that was probably the most startling thing, really. And again, I suppose for anyone that's looking for actual examples of, you know, where different species are coming in, all that can actually be, one, looked through on the Citizen Science Portal and on biodiversity maps as well. And I suppose the uptake from the actual recorder base, you know, having almost, you know, the guts of an extra 2,000 people, individuals who are actually, you know, actively recording is phenomenal. It's also worth mentioning as well is that while we're obviously kind of running a lot of these record initiatives and projects and that as well, there's also kind of good scope for partner organizations to come in and actually have their own recording farms effectively hosted on our page. So you'll see that there's, you know, recording farms for plants and butterflies and bees and things like that, but you'll also notice ones that are for Birdwatch Ireland projects or even things like the Irish Hedgehog Survey, which we noticed a huge increase in records last year because there was kind of active calls for the Irish Hedgehog Survey to actually record hedgehogs effectively. And I think that's all it really needs sometimes is there's, you know, people just need to be primed on what to look for. People are seeing things all the time and sometimes they don't realize that they can record it. Sometimes they think, why would I bother recording it? So I suppose when we were looking last year, we realized that we weren't going to have any, you know, field outings and we weren't going to have workshops, things like that. So we came up with an idea of this Species a Day program where we would basically profile one species each day. And we ran that effectively, I think, from May all the way into the end of September. And, you know, a lot of people got in touch with us with that kind of saying, you know, that they've been seeing this for years and they never knew what it was or that they hadn't seen it since they were a kid. It's always been their area, but they're, you know, effectively almost this kind of idea of plant blindness, you know, that you don't see things unless you're praying for them sometimes. So I suppose our role in that sense is just to kind of make people aware that, you know, we're here for it and that people can submit whatever they want. And if they need support for it, that we can also help with that.
Oisin, thank you so much. It sounds fascinating and like an activity that any nature-loving citizen should jump on board, learn themselves and start submitting information as they consume it and as they experience it even better. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast. We'll chat to you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Yeah, thanks, Oisin.
Our final guest is Niamh Phelan,
Biodiversity Engagement Officer, who discusses the data center's outreach and training work.
A big welcome to Niamh Phelan from the National Biodiversity Data Center. How are you keeping?
Good, how are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm very good. You've got an interesting role, I believe.
Yeah, so I'm the Biodiversity Engagement Officer at the National Biodiversity Data Centre, and my role is really about engaging and supporting our biological recorders and also trying to grow our community and support new recorders. So we do that through a whole different variety of ways.
Yeah, because we heard from Liam initially, who gave us the big overview about how the data centre works, and we heard from O'Shane about the importance of recording. But I guess without the data, we're going nowhere fast. So your engagement around data is absolutely essential.
Exactly, yes. And we are completely reliant on our recorders for their generosity and for committing their time to recording biodiversity.
What are the kinds of things that we're recording? And who is it that you need to come on board to help you achieve that recording? I presume you're recruiting on an ongoing basis.
Recruiting on an ongoing basis, and we're delighted to have everybody involved. You can get involved based on your own interest, or if you're interested in a specific taxonomic group like bumblebees, butterflies, dragonflies, marine biodiversity, and we're happy to have people involved on their background, be they farmers or local authorities. We're really happy to take on anybody, and we're happy to support everybody.
And how does that work, Niamh? You know, if I've identified an area where I think might be relevant, how do I find out, how do I get in contact with you? How do I provide value? How does the recording work?
Great. So the first thing you can do is you can actually contact us and contact me through info@biodiversityireland.ie. And I suppose the first thing to mention is this beginner's guide to recording that we produced late last year. So this is a guide that aims to teach everybody what biodiversity is and how you can get involved with biological recording. The data centre work in kind of a variety of recording schemes. So we work in recording schemes of bumblebees, butterflies, dragonflies, marine biodiversity. We also do work in invasive species. So this guide will tell you how to get involved with each of those areas, and you can choose your involvement based on the time that you're willing to commit or where you're actually able to go as well, be that your garden or your local park, forest, and so on.
Okay, so it's not necessarily for people who are working in a particular sector like farming. It could be for the general public.
General public and farming and anybody who wants to be involved. There's something suitable for everybody.
So you mentioned there's a beginner's guide, and I'm guessing that takes you through the steps of how to get involved in a particular area and start recording and submitting the data to yourselves. And this data is very important because it feeds into a big information funnel whereby we're recording and comparing, and then decisions are being made on the back of that, you know, and I guess you're catching important trends. So for anyone who's listening, whatever voluntary time they have to get involved in the recording process, you are serving a big purpose, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah. And we really value anybody who submits records, even if they're once-off records or there's something more on a high-level monitoring scheme, which may be on a weekly or a monthly basis. So by submitting data to us, we're able to see changes over time in species or how they're distributed across the island as well. And we can relate this back to factors that might be causing these changes, such as land use change, intensification of agriculture, or in fact, climate change as well.
And from your point of view, are there any specific areas where you're doing a big reach out at the moment?
So at the moment, we're actually doing a festival on the farmland of biodiversity. So we're trying to promote a strong relationship between biodiversity and farmland. In Ireland, majority of our land use is designated to agriculture. In fact, over two-thirds of our land is designated to food production. So how our agricultural land is managed strongly affects our level of biodiversity. So this is a month-long festival over May where people can get involved with different recording schemes that are related to agriculture. So the ones that we focused on are Dragonfly Ireland, the Project Lapwing, which is a joint initiative between the National Biodiversity Data Centre and Birdwatch Ireland, and the Irish Hedgehog Survey, which is being run by a researcher in NUIG. We're also looking for data on butterflies and pollinators as well.
On one of the previous episodes, I think we have an example of one of your recorders. I think it's a farmer down in Horse and Jockey in that direction. You were saying he's not too far away from you?
No, he's not. No, and he's a fantastic recorder. He's involved with a huge amount of the work that we do. And he's kind of he's a good example of what we need from a recorder.
And would he be a typical example of how someone would get involved?
Yeah.
What was his name again?
John Fogarty.
Okay. You also mentioned, Niamh, that you've online training resources as well. I presume they're available to any people who'd like to participate in the recording process.
Exactly, yeah. So this year we've moved a lot of our training resources online. And the beauty of that is that people can go into the website and log in and they can take their time with learning how to identify new species. So at the moment we have three online training resources, one in learning how to identify dragonflies and damselflies. And this is broken down into smaller little modules on an introduction to them, and then two modules on damselflies, and also two modules on dragonflies. And there's also a little test in there that you can do just to see how your knowledge is, and you can keep referring back to these modules until you really get a good hands on the species identification. We also produce two other online training resources in butterfly identification. So one is a larger course which covers the 35 species of butterflies in Ireland. So the good thing about butterflies is they're a little bit tricky to record sometimes. They're kind of fluttering by you really fast. So you really want to take your time to get familiar with the upper wing and lower wing. So we bring you through the identification and features for both of those, and also any physical differences that might be between males and females. And that course also gives you a basic introduction to the different monitoring schemes that we do for butterflies. And then the second online course we have is specifically on the garden butterfly monitoring scheme. Rather than learning how to identify all 35 butterflies, which is an accessible group to start with, we've broken it down further into just the 20 species that are most that you're most likely to see within your garden. And we also bring you through about how to submit data and also registering your garden with us. And these courses can be used in conjunction with our online swatches, which are available for purchase through our shop. Swatches are just these small little handheld identification guides that people can use when they're out and recording in the field.
It sounds to me, Niamh, that for anyone who loves nature and would like to maybe even learn a little bit more and contribute in some positive way, it would be a fantastic activity to get involved in. And for parents with children who want to instill that love of nature, it sounds to me like it could be a really, really interesting activity for them to get involved and start recording on a regular basis. Would that be the case? And would you have people like that participating?
Yeah, we take on people who are younger generations as well. I mean, every kid loves playing outside and becoming familiar. Like, that's one of my kind of youngest memories, is being outside and playing with kind of insects and things. So it's great to have people, the younger generation, involved in biological recording and starting to bring on the new generation as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun thing to do with mom and dad and with your brothers and sisters.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And from a time commitment point of view, is it a lot of time per day or per week? And the recording, does it extend for long periods of time? How does it work?
So you can do it on different levels. You can do casual once-off observations. So I think Oisin has probably chatted a little bit about this as well, that you can send in one record through the phone application that we have, Biodiversity Data Capture app, or you can get involved with some of our higher time commitment monitoring schemes. So for example, the garden butterfly monitoring scheme only takes 15 minutes, and we ask you to do that once a week. Or the Ireland's butterfly monitoring scheme is once a week, and it could take around 1 to 1 hour to 2 hours per week. So no matter what your time commitment is, we have something available for you.
So Niamh, just as we wrap up, you know, I think you've told me that you're delighted for any of the farming community to get in touch, or anyone who lives on farms, families with their own gardens, be it, you know, be it the adults or the children. Are there any other groups of people who might like to get involved, do you think?
Yeah, of course. So we're happy to take on a huge variety of people. We can take on people that are interested in school projects or people who are interested in marine biodiversity, if they're just kind of lovers of the sea and if they're fishermen or scuba divers. And we're also interested in taking on scientists and researchers.
So if you have an interest in nature and playing your own role in monitoring it in a very, very important way, well, put your hand up, send an email. Give me the email address again.
info@biodiversityireland.ie.
Niamh, thanks a million for taking me through what fantastic work that you're doing at the National Biodiversity Data Centre. Thanks for coming on the Heritage Council podcast. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, well done. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Heritage Council podcast. For more information about our projects and programs, our work with others and our publications, please check our website, heritagecouncil.ie. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram or LinkedIn, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. See you again soon.